I have a phonetic version of wine, satan. Close? Obviously, I didn't quite get it right because Carol is looking at me like, what did she say? Okay. Anyway, I tried. In any case, I want to first say welcome to my boss and all of our provosts, and he will be talking in just a minute. But right before then, we've got a couple of changes that we're making here, but I'd like to ask Natalie to make an announcement about something that is going on in just a little bit, and I think that all of y'all might be interested in.
She's not here because she's prepping everything downstairs. So in the cyber tech today, 12 students are going to give 10-minute presentations on Montreal mysteries. So their assignment was they had to identify a mystery about Montreal and then try and solve it. And their solution is going to be illustrated using story maps. So it's been a digital mapping exercise as well. So you're welcome to come. We've got some refreshments down there. They're very short. And the students know that people will be coming and going, so don't feel awkward about if you wanted to stay for the, the nibbles here and then go down. But just you're welcome to come down to CyberTech and see what's going on.
Thank you.
And excuse me if I leave early because I'm going to go to teach.
Okay, can you move this to the next slide? Okay, just really fast, just a few comments. I just have to say thank you all again for another very successful adventure-packed year. The place is alive with students who are heading into the most interesting times of their semester. So it's only a little bit to go, but we're getting there. And I think that Isabel will be welcoming some new members to our library family, and I just want to say welcome to everybody, personal welcome before she introduces everybody. We're obviously at the end of the fiscal year, and again, we've gotten through pretty well. The budget has, according to our calculations, hopefully will be entirely spent, and we once again got some additional funds here at the end of the year to cover the deficit in collections as a result mainly of the continuing devaluation of the Canadian dollar against the American dollar and the euro. But we're doing quite well in that, thanks to support from the provost's office, and I'm not saying that only because he's here, but you hear me say that a lot. We're also we continue to be in the middle of recruitment season. There are a couple of we've got several important positions out there that are being recruited, but I draw your attention to two in particular in ROAR that are very much on our mind. One of them is the replacement for the head of OSLR, and the other is a university archivist. So plan to attend those job talks just as you normally would. The OSLR position has a search committee and a search process that's a little bit different from our normal search committee process because it's governed by guidelines put together decades ago, actually, for the governance of that library. So it is, as I said, it's a little bit different. As you know, this would normally be our last Dean's Corner of the year, but we have decided to schedule a special one within our general ways of doing things. We do have an established number of Library Council meetings and Dean's Corner meetings, but we can always, if the need comes up, have an ad hoc one, and we will be having one on May 11th, and it will be on hate speech. There's a lot of issues with what is hate speech? We talked about this at managers a little bit, and I realized that coming as an American, hate speech actually legally is something different in Canada, and there's actually less tolerance here for it than there is in the United States. And I thought, well, we need to talk about this. We really do. So I asked Danielle to look into it. And so you and Lynn Thibault, right?
That's right. So Lynn Thibault and I, so tune in on May 11th, and we'll talk about hate speech and freedom of speech also.
Yes. So it's, you know, it's an interesting place to figure out where it is, but I thought that we would have our experts talk about it, and we can just put everything on the table and scratch it behind the ears and pat it on the head and just play with it and see what it's all about. Okay, so that's pretty much it. There are lots and lots of exciting things going on, continuing to go on with planning for Fiat Lux. We've done a salon in San Francisco that was very successful. I will be talking in a couple of other venues about it. The Principals International Advisory Board in May, but also just talking with the graduate students, PGSS today, do a little PowerPoint presentation, and that continues to work in the background, as well as planning for the library presence in the Royal Vic. So there are some brainstorming sessions going on with that, and that continues to roll on. So, any questions about anything I've talked about? We'll have lots of opportunity to ask anything you want later, or from a distance. Okay. Okay, with that, I will turn it over to Professor Manfredi. Yeah, it's because we stream it so that we can get people from, so that we've got almost everybody here. We normally have more than Senate gets.
Okay, let me see if I can do this in a way that I don't blow it up. You got me? Is that okay? You got me? Oh, you want me to be, you want me to actually be, look, don't want to screw up your aesthetics. Anyway, thank you very much, Colleen, for inviting me. I'm very pleased to be here. I try to make the rounds of all of the faculty and library councils every year, and I think I'm coming to the tail end of them. So each one, I have more and more that I can say, so I could talk forever, but I won't. As you know, I actually wear two titles, as the provost and the vice principal academic, and there's a reason why those two functions are in a single office, and that's because as provost, I like to characterize myself as the chief budget officer of the university. I'm responsible for designing the university's budget and determining how the money at the university is allocated. And as vice principal academic, I'm the chief academic officer. And the reason why those two things are together is that our budgetary development and our budgetary allocations need to be driven by our academic mission. And so those two functions are in the same office. And so what I thought I'd do today is I'll talk a little bit about both of those things. What are some of the academic priorities and initiatives that are informing our budget development currently and going forward? And then say a little bit about where our budget is. And because we're at the time, because of the time of year that we've now reached, I can probably say more about the budget than I might otherwise be able to say. And also because we've had a federal budget, we've had a provincial budget, which has obviously implications for what we do. So let me just say a few words about the academic side and what are some of the academic priorities that are driving our budgetary development. There are really sort of three big ones, and if you saw my last presentation to Senate, my second budget presentation, you would have seen these. One is obviously there's the principal's priorities, her five priorities around the McGill commitment, around the My Workplace initiative, around our research activities, et cetera. So obviously all of those priorities and feed into them, and you can find out what those are by looking at the principal's website. The second set of priorities are ones that are going to be emerging out of the strategic academic plan that I've spent the last few months developing in consultation with the deans and others. As many of you know, for the last probably decade, McGill has been driven by two statements of academic strategy. The first was the white paper Strengths and Aspirations, followed by the follow-up to that, which was Achieving Strategic Academic Priorities. That second document reaches the conclusion of its operational life this year, and the principal asked me to develop another the successor to Achieving Academic ASAP. And what I decided to do after consulting with the deans, it was clear that we were already engaged in lots of different strategic planning exercises, whether it's planning for the next major fundraising campaign or the Task Force on Indigenous Studies and Education, which I'll say a few words about in a second, or other things that we're doing, that there wasn't a whole lot of appetite or bandwidth in the university community to kind of put ourselves into a giant strategic planning exercise that involved, you know, 100 people and 22 committees for months and months and months. And so the idea was to do something that would be focused, concise, achievable within a particular framework, and that was my goal. My objective was to write a strategic academic plan that was 4 pages long, and I've done that. So we're going to have a 4-page strategic academic plan. And I presented it once to Senate, and I hope to bring it to Senate in April, or I will bring it to Senate in April, hopefully for Senate's endorsement, and then it will go to the Board of Governors for its endorsement. And it's designed around the principal's idea of a university that's open, connected, and purposeful. So it tries to identify 5 ways in which McGill can be more open, more connected, more purposeful, and around the things of being open to diversity, connecting across disciplines and outside of the university, and so on. I'm sure Mark has copies of it. Anyone who has access to Senate documents can get a copy of it, and I'd be happy to distribute it once it's been endorsed by Senate, of course. It will be up on the website. So that's the second set. What are the priorities? And there's some very specific things in there. One of the things, for example, is tripling the amount of money we spend to support students going abroad. There are some things around enhancing faculty diversity, both in terms of gender balance at the full professor level and the full librarian level, although it's probably not as big an issue here, although perhaps it is, but in the opposite direction. And also making sure that we have diversity in other ways as well. So there are a number of specific targets that we're going to try to move forward on. So that's I think exciting. So that's driving some of ours. And then embedded in that, and the third thing that's been driving some of what will drive a lot of our budget allocations for next year and certainly the year and probably a year after that, maybe longer, is the Task Force on Indigenous Studies and Education, which presented its preliminary report to me in June or January. And the final report will be presented in June 21st. Be there. It's going to be a nice ceremony at the Hochelaga Rock again, where we will take that report. And so there are going to, of course, be a number of recommendations coming out of that task force to which we'll have to attach budgetary allocations. And we're already doing that. Part of the reason for having a preliminary report was so that I could already be thinking about how we can start to move forward on this for the fiscal year 18 budget, not wait until fiscal year 19. And as well, a lot of the faculties, when they developed their budgets, identified areas where they could, quite apart from the task force, where they could advance initiatives in this area. So there was a lot of faculty-specific initiatives that are going to be funded in this year's budget around those themes. Some of those faculty-led initiatives sort of overlap with things that are coming out of the task force, which is a good thing. So those are the sorts of things that we're going to be looking at. Those are the kind of way in which we try to build the budget. We build it by looking at what are the academic priorities at the institutional level, what are the academic priorities coming up through the libraries and the faculties, and how can we best achieve those activities. One of the most important areas that we're working on now is, I think it's an important supporter of the academic mission, is reinvesting in administrative and support staff. So that's an area where we're starting to loosen up some of the budgetary controls, reductions on administrative and support staff that were put in place in 2011, 2012, when we had some fairly heavy cuts to our budget. So we're looking to do that as a way of, I mean, that's an important support to our academic mission. So enough about that. Let me say something about the budget itself, and then we can I can open up for questions. I'm in a very fortunate position. I happen to become provost at a moment when we're entering a period of financial stability, fiscal stability. So I, you know, get up every morning and thank the fact that I was able to have a good night's sleep and not have to worry about some of the things that my predecessor may have had to worry about. So last year's provincial budget brought an end to the cuts to universities, or new cuts to universities. There were existing cuts that have to be carried on through the system. This year's provincial budget is bringing reinvestments in it in post-secondary education. The announcement is a $500 million system-wide reinvestment in universities that actually amounts to a $200 million increase to base funding for universities, which in McGill's case, by the five, is rolled out over 5 years. 5 years, our base budget should be up by $20 million, roughly $20 to $25 million, if it all gets distributed according to our assumptions. That's a big change from a few years ago when we were getting, you know, $15, $20 million cuts. So that's important. So that's going to give us a lot of room to make some new investments. So that's good news. There's good news for student funding. There's good news for investments in infrastructure. So all in all, this was a good news budget. However, most of the new investments, of course, will take place in years 4 and 5, which is after the next election. So, you know, governments aren't stupid, right? They plan things so that if you want the goodies we're promising you, you need to vote for us next time, is what they're telling you. That's not an endorsement of any political position whatsoever. That's just, as a political scientist, my analysis of why the budget is developed in the way it is. So that's where we are. But nevertheless, it's all very positive. On the federal side, it was kind of a mad budget for post-secondary education. There was no new funding for the granting councils, other than the new funding they announced last year is continuing. They're taking some of the leftover money from the Canada Excellence Research Chairs and repackaging it as the Canada 150 Research Chairs. There's going to be 25 of those. But more or less, this was not a big federal budget for post-secondary education in Canada. There's the Naylor report on basic science research, which is coming out soon, we're told, and maybe that will bring some new investments, but we just don't know. So the federal budget was pretty, you know, nothing bad there, but nothing particularly good. Our own budget, as I said, we're in a period of stability. I'm projecting roughly, for this year, I'm projecting us to break even, roughly. You know, we seem to be on track for a balanced budget to finish the fiscal year with a balanced budget, which is a good thing. I'm projecting a $6 million deficit for next year, although if, depending on how these new Quebec investments roll out, that may be less, but just the way different expenditures roll out over years. And then going forward, we're projecting basically balanced budgets. And in that, I've built in a lot of resilience into our budget for two reasons. One is we have to guard against exogenous shocks. They can happen any time. So I wanted to build enough resilience into our budget that can handle unforeseen circumstances. Largely, I would say at the provincial fiscal level, in case something, you know, suddenly turned the wrong way, went sideways, we have enough resilience in our budget to handle it. And the second thing, and obviously this is one that involves the libraries to a large degree, when I look around our campus and think about what we need to support our academic mission, I see us doing a tremendous amount of capital expenditure and capital development, putting money into our buildings and infrastructure. And the only way we can do that is, quite frankly, to borrow money. Which means I have to have resilience built into our budget to service those loans. As you know, we're in the process of taking out $400 million in bonds to support deferred maintenance, $100 million on the IT side, $300 million on the bricks and mortar side. Eventually, that will be a $25 million claim on the operating budget, because we have to pay for that, but it's necessary. I mean, we can't have buildings with scaffolding keeping pieces of them from falling on people anymore, let alone the basic infrastructure of running a global 21st century university. And I see us doing more. And you can think of the big potential new capital projects that we have, the possible redevelopment of this site, the Fiat Lux project, the Royal Vic project, perhaps the Powell site redevelopment project. So I'm very, very conscious of the fact that we're going to have to be doing, there's going to be a lot of construction on this campus, whether it's deferred maintenance or perhaps more exciting new stuff. So I've built resilience into the budget to deal with that. Any rate, I think that's about all I wanted to say formally, so I'm happy to hear your comments, answer your questions. Yes, sir.
You've actually already partially anticipated and partially answered the question about the last thing that has to do with budget resilience.
Yep.
We budget over a multi-year horizon.
Right.
We update that every year.
Yep.
And the government does something similar by announcing, well, as you did a couple weeks ago, money over a five-year period, but most of the money comes from the tail end of that.
Right.
Which means that the budget is always a combination of what I call jam today, which is the believable money for the next fiscal year, and jam tomorrow after the next election money, which is not always trustful. What I'm wondering is, to what extent does the jam tomorrow money get hardwired into the budget? And to what extent does it get considered merely aspirational?
Well, that's a good question. So let me deal with that perhaps in the following way. When we're projecting out 5 years, so our expenditures are relatively easy to predict, right? Our largest expenditure is people. We have agreements, whether they're collective agreements and so on. We know what we know what salary increases are going to happen over the next several years. We have plans on how to increase our complement of either librarians or tenure track staff or administrative and support staff. So that's relatively predictable. We can plan. Our expenditures are relatively predictable. We know that Hydro-Québec is going to raise our electricity by 2% every year. It's predictable. On the government side, remember that our 75% of our revenue is enrollment driven, and it's enrollment driven either because of the tuition we collect or the fact that our government grant is enrollment driven. And the one good thing about Québec is that it funds every student you bring in, right? So you can actually predict. We know what our enrollment targets are. We have a good idea of how much tuition is going to come in, what the grant for those students are. So there's variation, but maybe not as much as there might otherwise be. So we're reasonably confident. But of course, the further out you go from next year, the less and less confidence you have in the results. There are some things that the government has promised that Québec tuition, for example, will increase every year by the increase in disposable family income as calculated through revenue Québec data. So, we kind of know that it's going to be about 1.5% a year, so we can calculate that. If it gets better, it gets better. So, yeah. Yep.
You mentioned increased funding to support students studying abroad. I think that's what I heard you say.
Yeah.
But I just wondered, to what extent does this university and do other Canadian universities concern themselves with the outcome of undergraduate education and the employment prospects for students and what they're studying and where that's going to go? I mean, their economic prospects, the advice they get, the way they put together their majors and what they're studying and what that could possibly open up for them. Do we think about that at all?
Yeah, we do, but I think we have to be very careful. Look, we're not a trade school, right? The principal likes to put it, our role is not to make our students job ready. Our role is to make students future ready. And that's what we're trying to do. And we're trying to predict out what they need to be ready for the future that's going to meet them. At the same time, obviously, we're concerned about making sure that the skills they acquire and the experiences they get will increase their economic prospects once they graduate from university. And of course, we do our best in career and placement services and so on. But I think we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we thought that our job was to train students to do particular jobs. Maybe I'm old-fashioned in that respect. I think I was the dean of the Faculty of Arts, and I saw art students as I traveled around the world doing all sorts of interesting things that probably, I mean, it had a lot to do with the skills they learned in their undergraduate degrees, but probably had very little to do with the specific subjects they studied, right? In many cases, they, whether they were, the guy running the largest cinema chain in the UK, or, a Tony Award-winning costume designer. I mean, you didn't learn those skills at McGill University, but you learned, or you didn't learn those specific trades, but you learned skills that helped you. So yeah, we want to make sure that our students are prepared for the world outside the university. And I think two things that we're doing to do that in particular is we put a much greater emphasis on experiential learning than we had in the past, and I think that's important. Students are demanding it, and I think employers look at that very positively. And the international experience, Canada's not very good at that. We're behind other countries in doing that. McGill actually is better than most, but we could do a lot better. So what I referred to is that we have about $1.5 million a year in mobility funding to help support students who want to go abroad, take advantage of our exchanges abroad. And the plan is to triple that. Because the two things students tell us that act as disincentives for studying abroad. One is the bureaucracy surrounding credit transfer, which that's something we got to fix. And secondly, the financial impact. And we don't want those opportunities to be opportunities for just a few. That particular envelope is for the farm management, the FMT program, and that's really basically right-sizing that budget. That program has been operating at a loss, so yes, it's very good, but it's no longer going to be operating at a deficit position, I think. So I think that's the way that's going to work. It's basically ensuring that program is adequately funded for the programs it's providing, and we'll be able to continue. It's a very exciting, interesting program. It's the only one for basically potential Anglophone farmers, as I understand it. I've had lots of discussions, but that's the way it's going to work out.
No other questions?
A much lighter comment.
Yes.
Can I state my glee?
Which glee?
My bicycle legally on Lower Campus.
There you go.
Congratulations. You like that? Seeing the sign saying, what about that? That's really wonderful.
Okay, well, good. I'll take that back to the people responsible for doing that. All I did was say, okay. So somebody else did all the hard work on figuring out how to make that work. I think it's both. I mean, look, we're in a period in Canada, the report of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission on residential schools had a number of calls to action Many of those calls to action were specific to universities. So every university in Canada is thinking, how can they best, how can it best answer those calls to action? Seeing that coming, I thought that, I mean, part of it is personal for me because I got to know a lot of the programs that we were doing at McGill, and I saw that there was value in them, and that I thought there was an opportunity for McGill to become a leading institution in the eastern half of the country in this area. Part of it is driven by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. The task force has got a broader mandate than just the calls to action on the TRC. It's about, there's sort of five areas it's looking at: student retention, recruitment, faculty retention, recruitment and retention, our programming, our physical space. You may have just noticed University of British Columbia just erected their reconciliation totem pole, which will have a tremendous impact on making it a welcoming space. I think universities have a tremendous opportunity and obligation to enhance the educational level of Indigenous Canadians and to make sure that they get to benefit in all of the good things that other Canadians do. So those are all the reasons that I think it's important for us to do it, and because of where we're located.
With the feedback form, and I've also heard word that there's technical difficulties with the feed itself, with the live stream. I'm trying to understand what's happening on the other end, but people click and some people say it doesn't work, so we're going to try and figure it out. Okay. But people from afar, if you have questions, do email me directly and I will feed the questions to the speakers.
All right. Video online.
Yes.
So I'll be presenting on the Senate Committee on Libraries on behalf of the library staff members who are appointed by the Senate Nominating Committee. So that consists for this year of Mary Larenko, Don McKinnon, and myself. So I'll describe a little bit about what the committee does and also what's taken place at the last two meetings, the one that happened in November and then the one that happened just in February. So basically, the committee consists of a lot of people. Its chair is this year Ghislain McClure, who is the academic or is associate provost, academic priorities and resource allocation. So she's the chair. We of course have Dean Cook on the committee, as well as the three library members I was mentioning, and we have a lot of other people as well. So there are faculty representatives who are appointed by a Senate Nominating Committee. There are a lot of the branches here in the library have advisory committees, and so the chairs of those committees are also on the Senate Committee on Libraries. We have student representatives as well. So it's a pretty large group of various constituents. So basically, we review library policies and planning documents. We get a lot of information about events and news that are happening in the libraries, and there's oftentimes guest speakers. So over the last few meetings, there's been different speakers who've come in. The terms of reference for the committee, as well as the meeting minutes and the current composition of the committee are all available on the library's website. They're a little buried, but you can find them by going to the library website, clicking on About, and then going to the section for committees, and it's listed there. And also when the minutes come out, so usually there's quite a bit of a delay before the minutes are actually approved and become available, but when they are, library staff are notified in the weekly update that we get. So basically in November, we had a pretty full agenda. Joseph Hafner came and talked about HathiTrust, so what it is, McGill's participation in it, and the grant that Hathi received to digitize and to include all sorts of things that weren't previously in the public domain. There were lots of very interesting questions from members, and Dean Cook addressed some of those. So we had Professor Saber, who was talking about copyright challenges, and Dean Cook encouraged him and others, of course, to retain their copyright whenever possible. Dean Cook usually takes some time to go through the types of things that are going on in the library at any given moment. So she'll give a bit of a summary of the things that are taking place, things that are important and priorities for the library, like the recruitment that we're going through right now, the Fiat Lux, obviously, and various other activities that are taking place. The student reps are mostly involved in, well, various aspects. They bring forward issues that are problematic or things that are concerning students, both undergraduate and graduate students. And one thing they've been active in involving the committee in is discussions about the Library Improvement Fund. So there is a rep on the committee called named Malcolm McClintock, who talked quite a bit about the priorities for the spending of that money. So it's interesting. You get to find out a little bit about what the students want. It's led to some interesting changes. Most of the things end up being funded by the Library Improvement Fund. Some things end up being funded by the library, which is an example of the sign-in barcode scanners were actually a suggestion from the Library Improvement Fund, but something that the library ended up purchasing. So these are the barcode scanners that let students get in much more quickly during after hours rather than signing in manually with a guard. So those ones are in place. We hear about those things taking place. I reported on the new computers that we received through the Library Improvement Fund that were installed in Schulich Library. They're great. We've got faster computers. We've got better computers than before because of that fund. So that's an improvement that we've seen at Schulich. And then there's other things that come up. Professor Bastien Castagnier mentioned the open access fees that him and his colleagues have more and more concern about, fees that they're getting charged not only for open access but other things like color figures that journals are charging more and more for. And of course, this is an interesting dialogue to be having with faculty and ways that the university and the library can approach these issues in making sure people understand that fees aren't always required and working to promote the kinds of open access options that are available that don't necessarily cost money, but that do require awareness of the options that are available. There was also a open access forum that was held in the fall, and all of the members of the Senate Committee on Libraries were encouraged to attend that forum. And then the last thing from that meeting was going over the terms of reference from the Humanities and Social Sciences Library Committee. They had a committee, and it's still existing. They have been recently looking at the terms, as have most of the other branch advisory committees, looking to see if the terms of reference are still up to date, making changes as needed. So that was a project that pretty much is finished up now, and most of the advisory committees have up-to-date policies and terms. For the February meeting, Dean, the new associate dean that we have now for user services, was in attendance, Jeffrey Archer. So he was introduced and invited to attend the next meeting, actually, which is taking place tomorrow. So he'll be attending that meeting. Dean Cook reported that we would be renewing up to date, so people were very happy about that. As you may know, that's a database that's very expensive, but also very highly used by lots of McGill students and clinicians. So people were reassured to hear that that would be continuing. In terms of cuts, rest assured, there aren't any large ones coming, and people were happy to know that as well. And briefly, the dean talked about the cyclical review that went on in ROAR. In fact, we're going to get a whole presentation on it at the next Senate Committee on Libraries meeting tomorrow. So Natalie Cook will be coming and presenting more details on what that cyclical review came up with. We also discussed the Mies Grand Trial that's taking place currently in Humanities and Social Sciences and in Schulich. That's the using your own personal device to be able to check out books. So we talked a little bit about that and how it was progressing. And then I reported on the treadmill desk, which if you don't know already, is located in Schulich Library and is available for student and staff use. That's about it from the last two meetings. Are there any questions about the committee or about anything that we've had so far? Yes.
No,
they're not that super. No, they're just really fast. Yeah, we kind of call them that informally in Schulich, and they're super for us. Let's put it that way. small letter super. Yeah, so they're vastly an improvement, and one thing about them that students are particularly happy about is that they have a lot of the engineering software that we haven't had in any libraries up until now. So that's really good for the engineering students, but yeah, they're small s, super. Any other questions? Okay, so if you have questions after today, you can contact me or Dawn or Mary. We're happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Madame Robert. We have an update from Matugi. The website is down. Can't be accessed.
Uh-oh.
Turn off the camera then. Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry. I'm like, if you get like 5 emails for me to everyone library, it's about this. Sorry. I'm trying to get people connected, but ça marche pas.
So good afternoon, everybody. Last time we had a Dean's Corner, it was sometime in December. So I listed the new staff that have joined and will be joining, and it's by alphabetical order, so we'll go past future and present, so bear with me. So in January, we'll welcome Francesca Freddy. Natalie and her team welcome the latest liaison librarian to join. No need to stand for the camera since I guess... But if any, you know, maybe for the people in the audience who haven't met you yet. Francesca, welcome. It's nice having you with us today. In July, we will be welcoming Eka Gregoric. Eka was one of the three candidates that you've met in January who had applied for the user experience librarian. So she'll be joining us in July. Next week, on Monday, Anaïs, Charles, and Jillian will be welcoming Razali Ranavishyan as the senior library clerk. So she'll be here on Monday, April 10. Anna Di Pietro, back in March, welcome Kristen Lenhoutz. Kristen, nice having you with us. She joined the team as a cataloging editor. Just a few weeks later, it was the turn of Dawn to welcome a new employee, but I don't think she's with us. Kuniko? Oh, Kuniko is sick, so chicken soup. Next time, you come. So welcome to Kuniko. And finally, Rare Books. Welcome back, right? Because Octavian was working as a student navigator, so he's the latest addition to Rare Books and Special Collection as a documentation technician. So, welcome, Octavian. Internal movement also. So, some of them are more promotion and transfer. Others are more regularization. So, since the month of January, Natalie Waters was regularized in her position of head of the Schulich Library. Congratulations, Natalie. She's rolling her eyes. Then Melissa Como, who had been working for a year at Osler as a senior library clerk, came down the hill and joined Chris and the rest of the team in Rare Books as the head library clerk. Melissa is with us. Yeah, there she is, all the way in the back. And then Liliana Ospina, who had joined USL back in the fall as a senior library clerk, was the selected candidate to replace Peter as a manager, a library supervisor, but she's not with us today. But on your way down, you can say hi. So that's about internal movement. So in the month of March, April and Eamon left behind the responsibility of librarian to concentrate for the next 6 months on their research project. So they'll be away until the end of August and back with us on September 1st. And then another type of leave, always my favorite. Yay! Jessica, she's not here. Oh, there she is! So, Jessica will be with us until mid-July, and then she will leave us for a year or so in a few months to fill another big job, big shoes of mother of a new baby. So congratulations, Jessica. Yeah, well, that's the sad part of the presentation. Marie-Hélène Hood in February was joined the group of happy retirees. So she left archives and rare books after many pleasant years with us. And it's going to be the turn of Rénal Lepage to leave in the month of May after 36, 37 plus years of services. So Rénal will be retired at the end of the month of May. So congratulations to our new inductee to the retiree club. We could start a club also for retirees. And good luck on this wonderful new adventure. Recruitment. So those are the active search that we're working on. Alphabetical order. Some are more ahead than others. So as Colleen mentioned, the position of director and university archivist has closed last week, so we'll start reviewing the CV. We have the position of head librarian for the Osler Library that we have a committee, we have reviewed the CVs, and now we have narrowed down dates during which we'll conduct interviews during the month of May. We have a position of liaison librarian for rare books and special collection who closed last week that we'll start reviewing the CVs. We add a position of documentation technician in ILL, and we are close to the final step in that file. And then finally, there was two positions of senior library clerk within humanities and social sciences, one regular, one temporary, that the posting have closed, and CVs are currently being vetted, and a list of candidates will be made shortly. Current and upcoming search. What? Okay, so yeah. Actually, you know, I'm happy that he left, that the provost left. Because I don't know if you remember a few years ago, it was Massey, Professor Massey was here, and it was during the budget cuts for the admin and support staff, and how he was saying there was no money, hiring freeze, and this and that, and right after, and he's sitting there, and right after I'm there, and we're recruiting for this position, and we're recruiting for that position. I could feel like the intensity from his...
I explained.
And it was like, yes, budget cuts. They're all coming for free. So upcoming and current searches. So we will be posting for a cataloger position within Megan's group in collection services. We'll be posting a cataloging editor position. That's with Helen and Louise, so for processing. We'll, now that Natalie is officialized in Schulich, we'll look for a head librarian for McDonald Campus Library. This will probably be the same kind of search that we did for Schulich, an enter call of interest. And then there's currently a posting for a liaison librarian position within Humanities and Social Sciences Library. We will be posting a metadata analyst librarian. This in previous Dean's Corner was label programmer, right? We had said programmer. But after posting the position and, you know, rethinking or thinking a little bit more what was needed and the profile of the position, we decided to stop the search under the M category of programmer and do a new search under the librarian tenure track group. And finally, we're still looking for two programmers for application development within digital initiative. Voila. Voila. That's it. And then, well, yeah.
Okay, so I guess everybody knows what this is. This is the Seed Library on the campus. So I went online and there aren't any seeds left. But the only ones left were like a niece or something. If y'all are listening from Matt, get some more seeds anyway. So I'm really, we'll figure out the technical difficulties of what we're going on, but hopefully this is still recorded so that people will be able to get in and it'll be posted.
Yes.
And thank you all very much. I mean, any questions about anything? Final words from anybody on anything?
It's working now. That's
the way it works, anyway. Thank you all very much, and we have just a few little munchies out here. Take a little bit of time to talk to your colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you.